Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, and welcome to Cutting the Curd, the weekly cheese-focused show on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Elena Santigade. My guest today is Lilith Spencer. Lilith and I cut our teeth together at the Brooklyn Larder Cheese Counter back when that shop first opened in Brooklyn. Since then, Lilith has gone on to navigate her cheese career in fascinating and inspirational ways. After the Larder, she managed the opening of Wedge, a small shop in Brooklyn, and then eventually moved to New Mexico. While working at the Cheesemongers of Santa Fe, Lilith's mesmerizing cheese platter art caught fire on social media. It is no understatement to say that Lilith directly influenced the dominant current artistic style of cheese platters in the U.S. I feel really confident saying that. She also happened to win the Cheesemonger Invitational in 2016. In recent years, Lilith has made her way back to the East Coast and has put down roots in Vermont's Northeast Kingdom as part of the team at Jasper Hill. Lilith, welcome to Cutting the Curd.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I'm actually going to jump back and talk a little bit about your very early cheese days, because I think your cheese origin story is like one of these unique things. It's like when people meet somebody who's actually from New York City and they're like, what? I thought nobody was. Because am I remembering it correctly that you studied cheese a bit in school?
Yes, I did. Right. I went to Hampshire College in Western Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And was really lucky that they have a working farm on campus. And they actually had a herd of Dutch belted cows. And there was a professor there who was interested in using cheese making as a way to teach microbiology and biochemistry to incoming students, maybe students who were already scientifically minded and also students who were interested in science, but, for whom food might be a good way to get into it if they weren't sort of already thinking that way.
So were they already making cheese, or was it just a dairy, like liquid milk or fresh products? Were they doing full cheese making?
Milk. There wasn't much processing happening at the time, and I'm honestly not sure. I have not been keeping up with what the dairy farm's been doing over there, but I know there were plans for a creamery before I left. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, part of my time at Hampshire was spent as a teaching assistant for this cheese making class. I prepared for that a little bit by doing the cheese making certificate program at the Vermont Institute for Artisan Cheese when that existed in Vermont. Yeah.
Wow, lucky duck. You're like one of the ones who got it before that shut down. That's so cool.
I know, yeah. I feel super lucky. And it was all because I took this nutritional anthropology class at Hampshire, where we sort of had to take a food of our choice and look at it from both the scientific and anthropological perspective.
Wow.
And I thought that raw milk cheese was really interesting, especially in the United States, and looking at that history of how the sort of American artisanal cheese renaissance came about here. Mm-hmm. And that kind of hooked me. Started working as kind of a cheesemonger at my local co-op, and ended up taking it on as my main sort of course of study at school. At Hampshire, everyone designs their own major in course of study and does a major sort of thesis style project at the end. And so mine was on cheese making and music composition, and I sort of found some fun ways to combine the two of those.
Oh, wow. How, what are one of those ways? I'm so fascinated how you combined them.
The main sort of event was I composed 8 pieces of music that were to be served as like acoustic textural pairings for 8 cheeses, one of which was actually Bailey Haven Blue, which I get to help make now, which is great.
Incredible. Things come full circle. I love that.
Totally.
So here's a tangential question on that note. Do you believe that the music, when you're playing music in the make room, it's having an effect on the final cheese?
I mean, it's funny, maybe not in the most direct way, but the music has such an impact on our mood and the way we interact with each other. And I think that when spirits are high, you know, better work tends to be done. I think that attitude has a lot to do with it. And when people are happy, they're easier to be focused and really care about what you're doing. So I think in an indirect way,
absolutely.
We don't like play music to the cheeses in the vault. The music playing people are working in there, but it's not.
Right. It's more about playing music to the humans who can then impart that energy to the cheese. Okay, I'm with you on that. I think that's a very intelligent and reality-based answer. Sometimes I like to fantasize about, you know, just the cheese having a direct response.
Absolutely. That would be great.
So that is so cool. I mean, this is just one of the many reasons, this could be a whole other entire podcast, but one of the many reasons I wish I could go back and do college over again with my current interests and passions. But I'm so thrilled to hear about how you developed that course of study and really like, sounds like you were already into cheese and then just ran with it, which is so cool. At that point, when you were in school and kind of building out that course of study, did you have a sense of what your career might look like or what you were aiming for?
My most sort of, I felt this like urgent, there was a goal with this like urgency to it. I really wanted to make cheese. I wanted to be a cheesemaker. I thought that was sort of like the highest honor someone could have in the industry. Like I don't know. I just love cheese so much. And I thought the idea of like actually producing something that a lot of people really enjoyed, sounded exciting. So my original plan was to, you know, try to find a cheesemaker, you know, most likely near Hampshire, you know, to work for and study under for a while. And I wanted to be like making my own cheese like as soon as possible, like within a few years. That was sort of the dream. But I had started working behind the counter at this local co-op, River Valley Market in Northampton, and they had, it was not a cut to order cheese counter, but you know, they had a really nice selection that really celebrated local and other New England cheesemakers. There weren't a lot of sort of, you know, higher scale production cheeses available in that section. They really took good care of it. And there were a lot of times when I would be cutting cheese, pre-cutting cheese to put out and have interactions with customers. And I really enjoyed those moments. And that's kind of when I decided, you know, maybe this is a real thing I could get into. Is this a real job? Like, is there a way to do this in a really serious way or in a more formal way?
What part of it do you feel like grabbed you, just sort of like grabbed your attention and sort of rerouted it from the cheese making endeavor? Do you feel like it was learning about the products or like having access to them? Or was it that sort of like retailers storytelling schmoozing aspect or the physicality of a store? Like, I'm curious what kind of grabbed you.
I think it was the storytelling thing for sure. I think that having this opportunity every time a customer, you know, had a question about or picked up a cheese, if I happened to be there to talk to them about it, you know, I was kind of studying these cheeses in school for, you know, various reasons as like research for my project. And so I was learning a lot about them and I felt like I was getting to know them and their makers and you know, trying to visit creameries and stuff. And yeah, after learning, just seeing like the hard work that went into it, and all of them have really interesting stories. I don't, there's just something about sharing that with someone that I wanted to, like, it became a different goal instead of like being one of those stories. You know, maybe I wasn't ready to like have that story yet, but I really wanted to tell people about the folks who were doing it, who were making cheese and doing these amazing things.
So then what brought you to New York City?
It was that kind of bug to want to be like sort of a you know, a better cheesemonger, or sort of expose myself to a different kind of cheesemongering. The sort of like in New York City, things are fancy and legitimate and there's so many people and, you know, the stakes are higher or something. And I didn't originally really want to live in the city. I wanted to stay kind of rural, or, you know, in this like college town kind of area. It was a little bit scary, but I started looking online at what cheesemongering jobs were available to see what was out there. And it seemed like New York had just had this concentration of opportunities and really incredible high quality shops. And I also saw a little ad on, or not an ad, but, you know, a post on Facebook for the Cheesemonger Invitational for the, what would have been the second one ever, I think. And I don't know, there was something about all of it that just really enchanted me. It was like sort of intimidated me. It scared me, the idea that like I would be jumping into this place where there's actually like a competition for this thing that I was so far from being qualified for. And I just wanted to do it. So I had a whirlwind weekend trip and interviewed at a few different places. Brooklyn Larder, just even just the interview was a great experience. We had a really nice long conversation. It turned out to be a great fit for a long time.
Yeah. And I feel like it's like the sense of community in, I mean, that's sort of a draw of a city in and of itself, is just that you can plug in to a lot of different types of community, different mini communities. But especially in those early years of the Cheesemonger Invitational, like before there were even that many like websites or blogs or, you know, like Instagram wasn't a thing yet. And so it was like, I remember that time, and also similarly feeling like there is like a culture happening in this city of cheese people, and they're doing things together and they're like really serious about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
And you were definitely one of those people that I was like, and there's Lilith, and she's totally one of those people. So then, you know, to bring back the art aspect of your life, you had been in school, you had studied, music, and then at the Larder, I mean, one of the things on top of like your extensive cheese knowledge, one of the things that you were known for in my book was the amazing, chalk, signage and, visual displays. Was that something that you had done at the co-op that you'd worked in, or was that sort of a new aspect of the experience for you?
That was new, you know, that was, kind of a fun new skill that I picked up. I don't know. I guess, at the co-op we have this, you know, open case, like a self-serve case where we had to pack in a lot of like a huge variety of cheeses. I can't think of like a number, but a lot, probably like a couple hundred. And, there was definitely some of that there, like, you know, sort of making this like case look full and neat at the same time. But, I had good, you know, I don't know. I had like big shoes to fill when I started at the Larder. There were already people doing awesome chalkboard art, and there were, you know, already cheesemongers who were sort of running that counter and building these beautiful cheese displays on the marble. And I sort of, you know, just wanted to do good by them. And, I don't know, with the chalkboard thing, it was a little bit more, I've always liked to like doodle and have had, you know, decent handwriting and like to, do different lettering just kind of for fun, for little things.
Natural fit.
chalkboard thing just kind of, yeah, came that one day, I don't know, something needed to be rewritten, and someone asked if anyone had the handwriting.
Can anyone use chalk?
Yeah.
Then it just becomes like a opportunity of circumstance, I suppose, in that case.
Yeah, and then it just, you know, they just started asking me to do it more, and then, I don't know, like when Alex, his Sarah came on board, he also started doing them, and he's, you know, legitimately making art now as well, which is cool to see.
Very cool.
But yeah, it's a fun, weird medium.
When you were at Larder, was that the first time that you had more exposure to imported cheeses, or had you had imports at the co-op?
It was definitely more cheeses that I had not seen before or tasted before, or maybe had read about or something like that. We did have imported cheeses at the co-op at my first job, but definitely not as many. And so that definitely upped my exposure to cheeses. I remember, you know, I had taken this trip to Portugal with my parents while I was in school. It was right before I started college. And my mom and I had this great experience at a kind of hole-in-the-wall restaurant where we showed up way before dinner time. They were having family meal. They weren't open, but they wouldn't let us leave, and they just kept bringing us food. One of the things they brought us was this. Yeah, it was amazing. Was, you know, like a torta style, like a Sicilian rennet, little sheep cheese, some local, like not a name, like, I don't know, something that he doesn't even leave the area. I don't know. With like warm bread around it, and I loved it. And I was like, this is my favorite cheese. I just decided it was the best, but I had no idea what to call it or where to find it.
Right.
But I remember at the Larder, like a few years later, the first time, you know, we got in something, I think Zimbro, and I sort of like recognized it and was so excited. And when I tasted it, was able to like confirm this memory and being so thrilled that I like found this cheese again. I thought I would never find it again. And so that was like exciting. I definitely hadn't been exposed to that kind of stuff before. Well, in
the US, that perfectly explains the magic that can happen when tasting cheese, right? So then fast forward a little bit, you were at the Larder for some time, for a long time. And then you opened Wedge, the small shop in Crown Heights. And then throughout all this retailing, did you feel the pull to make cheese yourself? Like, did you have kind of a plan for what you were, you know, were you adjusting your plans, or how did you navigate that original desire with your like urban cheesemonger life?
Yeah. I think, the pull was always there. I definitely started to think more about, you know, maybe I should just start making cheese at home or something like that. When I went to Wedge, when I helped open that up, it was, you know, it was a really exciting opportunity to see what it takes to open a cheese shop. And I learned a lot from that. And then I actually ended up going back to the Larder for like my last year in New York, because I was really lucky that they were so welcoming, you know, open to have me back, but it was just a great fit. And I was able to kind of, you know, like find my role there a little better when I returned. But I started getting interested in teaching about cheese. Like that started to become, it was like the customer interactions felt like not enough of like a platform or something. And I was seeing that was a trend picking up at other places, that people were teaching these really in-depth classes, and that sounded like fun, and it wasn't something that really worked with like our space or schedule or anything. And so that was on my mind, like, how can I do something that's a little bit more than retail? But I didn't necessarily want to leave a shop, but I was definitely thinking about looking for, you know, playing that role or creating a program or finding a place that already had a program like that.
Right. So then you left the city.
Yeah, and then I left the
city. Well, I'm actually going to pause us right there to take our break. And then when we come back from the break, I'm very excited to talk a little bit about your cheese platter art and then the transition into full-blown working for a producer, the rural life, bringing it back to that original desire. So we'll be back in a moment with more on cheese work and life and this story of Lilith Spencer.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Korsha Wilson, and I'm the host of A Hungry Society here on HRN. A Hungry Society focuses on highlighting dope people doing amazing work in food, and we talk about how we can make the culinary world a more diverse and inclusive space. You can join the conversation by checking out A Hungry Society wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm Elena Santigade, and I'm here with fellow cheese professional Lilith Spencer. And before the break, I mentioned that I was excited to talk about Lilith's amazing cheese platter art. And as we make our way through her sort of career timeline here, we've landed at the perfect moment. So, Lilith, you go to Santa Fe, you're at the Cheesemongers of Santa Fe, and I don't know what happened. I feel like if from my perspective, it was like suddenly my Instagram feed became this like, went from being just cheese to these like artistic creations, these like masterpieces of a cheese platter in your account and the Cheesemongers of Santa Fe account. And I mean, when we were at the larder, we didn't do that type of platter that often. Mm-hmm. So was this a skill that you knew you had? Or had this been dormant, kind of like making its way, your artistic, I'm curious to hear if your sort of artistic outlets had, you know, the chalk art had been one thing and music something else. And then did you feel that you also kind of like exploded with creative energy with those platters, or what happened? How did that happen?
You know, I sort of felt really, I think, you know, when I started at Cheesemongers in Santa Fe, I saw, I mean, the people working there before, they were already making these really cool platters. They were, you mm-hmm. know, maybe not quite as, I don't know, maybe overcomplicated them a little bit or something. I don't know. I feel like they were still these really beautiful, you know, not just neat rows of things, but right. like, you know, taking this round platter and using those curves and arranging things really like, you know, neatly and kind of beautifully. And, you know, with like all the pairings kind of nestled in between, that was kind of the look they were going for. And I was so excited to like have that freedom of, you know, I don't know, just, yeah, the way we were making platters at the larder was for a different type of thing. We were
it was more utilitarian or something, the way that we made them there. It was sort of like
very careful about keeping everything, you know, sort of separate and letting people arrange it how they wanted to when they got into their house. This is different, and the sort of the market in Santa Fe is different. You know, it's a very artistic town. There's just a lot of art there, a lot of museums, a lot of galleries, a lot of people there specifically, you know, to be there because they are artists or because they love art, you know, it's like very aesthetically focused town. And people, you know, a lot of the people who live there, you know, like dress kind of boldly and colorfully and things like that. So it's really, I think, says something about kind of reflective of the local culture too. But I mean, it's not something I knew how to do. I just started making more platters as I, you know, got settled at the shop, or, you know, it was something that, because Cheesemongers of Santa Fe is the, you know, the only cut to order cheese counter in the state. They were the first, you know, cheese shop, independent cheese shop. And this was, you know, it was hard to find people to work there who had experience. So the people there who were making the platters before, we know, had, you know, the owners had trained them, and then, you know, new people coming on maybe weren't ready for that skill yet in terms of, you know, maybe just the knife skills or just doing it quickly or something like that. Right. And since I had done some sort of plattering before, even though it was totally different, I was able to jump in. And even though I hadn't done it that way before, just, I think just the having that freedom, like I said, just kind of do whatever made it easy, you know, to like have fun with it and come up with.
And what was your process for coming up with ideas, or like, how would you approach a platter, or how do you approach a cheese platter when somebody's like, you know, here's the three cheeses and here are your accompaniments. How do you tackle it? Tell us a little bit about your process.
Yeah, it's really, for me, it really is all about the cheese. And I think that sometimes if you look at some of my potters, the cheese isn't always the thing that maybe visually stands out the most, or, you know, there is a lot of other stuff on there sharing the space with the cheese. So it might not seem like that at first glance, but I'm always thinking about the cheese when I'm putting things on there. And, you know, sometimes the customer or client will have specific wants or needs for that platter, and so that dictates it. But when I have, like, total control over all of the accompaniments, I'm thinking pretty hard about what will go with the cheese, if there's kind of a cohesive flavor palette, and then thinking about specific pairings, you know, setting the cheese down first and kind of anchoring that, making sure there's plenty of space between each of them, you know, helps a lot to kind of create these pockets of compatible flavors. And that's kind of how I go about it. So it's mostly about, you know, these two things taste great together, so I'm going to put them right next to each other.
Right. So you lead with flavor.
Yeah. And then, you know, color, there's so many, like, I don't know, food has a great color palette. Like, it's really pretty hard to mess up, you know, unless you're pairing really crazy neon tropical colors with, you know, very muted things. And I don't know, like, it's hard to go wrong as long as you've got contrast and a range, or you can sort of pick a set of colors and run with it, you know, all purple and red or something. But it's, food lends itself pretty well to this sort of thing. And so it's not hard. But it's kind of like the second priority. It's, you know, first it's got to taste good, and then, okay, here are the things that would work with this cheese. You know, what would be pretty? Or, like, is there something else on this platter that, you know, I want to have a yellow and a green and a, you know, purple thing or something.
Right, right. And do you like cut the cheese as you go, and sort of like, do you make a plan for the platter before you do it? Or are you more like cutting the cheese, placing things, like doing another piece and sort of like building it as you do it?
I kind of just build it as I go. I mean, I start with, you know, I lay out all the cheese first, and then kind of if there's charcuterie, then that's second, and if not, then it's sort of like from biggest to smallest, kind of like physically size-wise, or, you know, if it's kind of like the cheese and then the meats and then anything that's in like a bowl or container type thing, vessel, you know, and then anything that takes up a little more space, like big olives or something, and then kind of using smaller gaps to, you know, fill those in with smaller items. You can still fit a lot in there, kind of using that spatially, but I don't always know how I'm going to, like, cut the cheese ahead of time. In a shop setting where I'm trying to, you know, like, turn out a number of platters in an amount of time, then it's definitely more economical to say, okay, here's, you know, the four rectangles of comté that I'm using for four platters. I'm going to cut them all into, you know, matchsticks right now or something.
Right, right.
And, you know, I try to let the cheese tell me what shape it wants to be.
It's
a struggle to get it to do something. Maybe it's not the right cut for that cheese. If it's crumbly, you know, it's not worth it to try to cut pieces that are going to fall apart. You know, I don't know.
I like that a
lot. Some soft cheeses really don't need to be cut at all. I'm a big fan of cutting, you know, sort of like smaller soft cheeses in half, laterally, like bisecting them so that you have them kind of like two
open pieces in a way.
Open cut halves. Yeah. That you can scoop into. And, also sometimes people will eat the rind a little more easily that way. If it's not something they're cutting through the top, and it's, I think some people are put off by the appearance of rind on the outside of soft cheeses. So cutting them that way sometimes can encourage people to eat.
Yeah. I totally see that.
Yeah.
Plus, it's just fun to scoop a soft cheese. Like, give me a spoon and go to town. Most people are like, don't think of cheese as something spoonable. So that's fun, too.
Yeah, it's like a dip that's already ready to go.
Yeah, the original fast food. Slow food is fast food.
Yeah, exactly.
So then now you're making our way to present day. You're up in Vermont. You're working for Jasper Hill. Currently, you're working in both the dairy and also doing a little photography. But how did that transition happen? Did you finally feel like near the top of the episode, you said that you were maybe not quite ready, even though you felt this urgency to make cheese. did you feel ready to make cheese, or was it more like an opportunity that came up and you were just ready to be somewhere else and try something new?
Yeah, I mean, it was all of those things. I knew that I wanted to move back to the East Coast. I wasn't sure exactly where I wanted to land, but I had some ideas. I remember taking a road trip in the fall before I moved out here. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, kind of scoped out some places. I, you know, had seen some job postings online and connected with some people. And I thought that I might end up back in Massachusetts, maybe back near Northampton, maybe, you know, doing something with Hampshire or some other local farm. I don't know. And I definitely was ready to transition, like, out of retail. Knew I probably didn't want to do, the sales and marketing thing
right
at this point. Wanted to be doing some, like, you know, physical labor. I don't know. I just really wanted
more hands-on stuff.
And, yeah, be hands-on and see what production was all about. And so, yeah, I took this road trip. I pretty much visited every state in New England and on the East Coast except for Vermont. I was, like, very confident I would not end up in Vermont. And I can't tell you why I had this feeling, but I was just like, eh, probably not. And
interesting.
When I got back to Santa Fe, I was like, well, I found nothing. Like, nothing felt quite right. Every place I went to, I kept thinking, you know, I'm going to go to this place and I'll have this feeling and it'll feel right and I'm going to want to be there. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't happening. And then, you know, maybe a couple of days after that, I was on Facebook and there was a posting for this apprenticeship at Jasper Hill. And I'd never, like, I didn't know that was a thing. I hadn't noticed it before. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I applied and had, you know, like a really fun video interview with my, you know, current manager now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just talked about all of it. And the apprenticeship was just this great opportunity to really learn. It feels like truly an apprenticeship in the sense that it's about the person who's doing it and what things they're interested in learning. Jasper Hill does a really good job of putting you in those positions and exposing you to those things. And it's, you know, it's not like you're this extra person, but it's, you're not part of the normal long-term, you know, staff. And so it's okay for you to kind of move around and see what appeals to you. And there's always, you know, kind of this hope that, yeah, you'll find a niche or you'll be able to fill some sort of need and, you know, fit in really well and stick around. But it's not like a requirement, or, you know, there's definitely people who, you know, leave when they're done and that's fine. I went into it. I was so excited that it wasn't really a super long-term commitment. Like, I was really excited to do this thing and know that, like, it wasn't.
How long was it?
I didn't have a promise. Or it's meant to be, I think, like a 6 to 9 month apprenticeship.
Okay.
And I was like, I can do that. I can be here. It felt a little crazy. It's, like, very, very rural.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's not a lot going on. I just wanted to make sure. So it felt like the right move. And I knew very quickly that I wanted to stay. I knew once I started. I was working more in the cellars and the vaults, doing a lot of, you know, sort of affinage work. And then, you know, as I started to spend more time in the creamery, I just fell in love with it. It's like very physically challenging in a way that I find really satisfying.
Interesting.
At the end of the day.
Yeah.
And it definitely was like a struggle in the beginning, but I feel really like, I don't know. It makes me feel like tough and like I'm doing something.
Yeah.
You know, my body, like, I don't know. That's something that I
missed
about, like on farms before I started working.
Right.
Retail,
or even, but I feel like retail was a hint of that. Like for me coming from no experience on farms or in a rural sort of hardworking environment, like when I first got to the retail counter, part of what I fell in love with had nothing to do with the cheese. It was more just that satisfaction of the physicality. Yeah. Like using your body. And and like knowing where things are and like moving in a way that like felt smooth. It reminded me a little bit of being on a sports team and like getting good at a sport.
That's exactly what the creamery feels like. We're all like on a team or a pirate ship or something. Like,
I love that.
The Cellars has a lot of employees now, like 70, I don't know, like a lot of employees just working in the vaults and also in the offices and just like everywhere, the lab, you know, and, the company's gotten really big, but the creamery just sort of like by nature is a really tight crew. There's only, you know, like 6 or 7 of us that work in that building. Mm. And so it's, you get to know each other really well. You should rely on each other a lot. You know, a lot of the time spent working is, you know, you're like maybe alone in a room cleaning a lot of sort of like heavy equipment and right. It's like hot and everything is wet and, you know, you're not music on, but like you're not really talking to anyone a lot of the time. And
Yeah. Even
when you're all sharing a space, it's like there's a lot of noises happening or you have to focus on the task at hand. And, you know, like we definitely chat and joke around when we can, but it is a lot of sort of just, you know, work.
Yeah.
And, I really like it. I wanted to do that. It feels really good to like wake up and do that.
Do you notice a difference in the quality of your mind at all? I ask this because I'm curious about just the jumpy nature of modern work, you know, and like there's the whole thing of the devices and how much we're interacting with our phones, but even just like being in a workplace that's maybe where you're more interrupted and you're like interacting with people more in these like sort of shallow conversations just to clarify something or whatever. Do you feel that has changed at all? Have you felt something like that shift in any way?
Yeah, I do feel, I know what you're talking about. It is really, that is part of the appeal for sure, is that the job, it isn't the kind of job where I necessarily have to, I don't know, I can be at work and I can work hard and be focused, and then I do think about work when I'm not at work. Like, I think about cheese all the time, and I, you know, whatever. But not in the same way of other types of jobs where sometimes you leave and you're, you know, like, anticipating an email or a text.
Right,
or
more of a like stressful...
to be solving problems while you're not there or something. Like, it's nice to have a job where you really, like, throw everything at it, like, while you're there. And, like, that's what counts is, like, what you're doing, like...
Right.
With the cheese in the moment. And also just, that kind of work, like being physical also, I feel it's just like helped a lot of things. I mean, I wake up super early now, a lot of days for work, and then I'm done with the creamery by 1 or something. And then I have a lot of time to like do other things, to take care of myself in other ways. And, you know, I have time for like a nap and still more time to, you know, have fun or be productive or whatever.
Or to do. Maybe work on your new house.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the other news that you shared with me. Listeners, Lilith was sharing with me recently that she had bought a house up in the Northeast Kingdom, totally putting down roots up there.
Oh, yeah.
And that sort of made me think of like, okay, now we're in a different... We're like in a totally different phase, and this is like adulting while working in the cheese industry, right? So has that changed? Has that felt like a seismic shift? I mean, as a non-homeowner, I imagine that owning your own home is, to me, it feels like it will be a seismic shift when it happens. Has that changed your perspective on the work and sort of what you need from it, both sort of maybe physically and mentally, but financially and in terms of like the career ahead of you built on the one you've done so far?
Yeah, I think it's sort of all, I don't know which came first, like which feeling came first, but it's sort of knowing that I can, put down roots here. It has to do with, I mean, part of it is just like this sense of place, this feeling that I have about this place. It just feels right. I love the local communities. I love, like the landscape. I like the winter is brutal, but I just like it. I like all the seasons up there. I like, I don't know, everything it has to offer. And so that's part of it. And it's also working for Jasper Hill is, the first time that I've worked for a company, not an independent entity or shop, like just something that's a little bit more, you know, with
it's
benefits.
It's more of like an environment. So is that the first time you've had benefits?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is kind of crazy. I've been in this industry for, you know, a decade now. Yeah. And it's, to be honest, I don't know, like the shift, like there's a lot of things to celebrate about, you know, the changes I've made. I'm really happy with where I am. I sort of feel like, I've been at Jasper Hill for a year and a half now, and I'm starting to like find my spot. I am finding a balance between, you know, I'm at the Creamery 3 days a week now, 2 days a week. I work with Zoe on kind of marketing stuff. I'm going to be taking on more social media and doing, you know, photography. And
that's great.
It's all sorts of little things too, just sort of picking up these little pieces of, you know, I used to be a cheesemonger, so I can help anytime there are visitors, you know, cheesemongers or shop owners. Anytime we have cheese camp, I like to, you know, get involved with that. There's a lot of opportunities for me to like use this like eclectic mix of skills that I've gained over the, you know, past 10 years working in, you know, different shops and things like that. But it gives me, I feel very like secure. Like I, because the company is growing, you know, we've already just in the past year and a half that I've been here between like, you know, the new goats and the new cheeses we're coming out with using goat's milk, like that's a major change.
Yeah.
We have more and more employees every year, you know, like we're, I don't know, we're always like hiring, it's really exciting. I just feel like, there's always going to be kind of somewhere for me to grow into or a new project to help take on, starting to kind of train up on sensory evaluation stuff, and we'll be helping to lead our R&D tastings, which I think is really fun. Maybe the most fun tasting because it's all it's also hard. We're like trying to hone in on what even our goals are.
Right, like define what it is you're even doing and tasting, and what you get to decide if it tastes right or not.
Like what's right? What is the cheese supposed to taste like? So that's like a team effort, you know, that I get to be a big part of. I don't know. It's like there's new opportunities all the time at a company like this to, gain new skills and things like that. But also, like I've kind of been making about the same amount of money for the past several years. And it's not, part of it is because I made a shift because I started something new and now, you know, it's, I could have maybe, tried to stay in retail and gain some sort of, you know, like salaried management role, which is not what I was looking for on like a personal, that wasn't my personal career goal and not something I emotionally wanted to invest in at the time. Like I was just kind of done with retail. So, it's just kind of the reality of it is you can like switch gears and you can find these opportunities,
but it's
but also, you know, my cost of living is way lower out here. I mean, even before I bought the house, like it's just living rurally is not as expensive as living in the city, you know, things like that. So.
Yeah. It's funny. It's like a cheese career is definitely not linear by any means. And because of the sort of the jumps that a lot of people do in between different links in the supply chain, that sort of like potential for wage stagnation or even taking a pay cut to sometimes jump to a different realm of the work is a real reality.
Unfortunately. I mean, and it's something that a lot of people are talking about right now. There's a lot of people my age, our age, you know, sort of in this, like, whatever you want to call it, like a professional generation or something.
A decade in or so.
People who are trying to transition out of retail or out from behind the counter, and, like, you've amassed these, like, incredible skills that definitely can be applied in different ways in different sectors of the industry, but you have to be creative about it, and it's really hard to, like, navigate. There isn't, like, a typical path that people take. And
do you feel like
that right now? Yeah, the reality is you have to, if you're switching gears, it might be an apprenticeship or an internship or, you know, something like that, that feels, you know, when you're 30 feels a little bit crazy to be like an unpaid intern or like a stipend, you know, something like that feels
good.
But, you know, it can open up a lot of pathways.
Do you feel like you have had to, the times when you've kind of had more opportunity either at the Sellers or previous to that they've been roles or projects that you have identified and defined and kind of made the case for more than opportunities that were presented, you know, by someone else?
I think that self-advocacy is like a huge part of the game in the food world in general. Like if you want to, I don't know. Like, I think I probably could have done more of that when I was thinking about, oh, wouldn't it be nice to teach a cheese class? Like, I think I could have you know, maybe tried harder, fought harder, made it, you know, been a little bit more creative about ways to do that, or yeah. something like you said. And I see a lot of people doing that. There's a lot of like, this is the other thing you can do is get very like entrepreneurial about it. Right. And sort of like
right.
freelance or do private events on your own or make your own company. And, you know, some people have really, really succeeded with that.
Right.
But yeah, I find even at Jasper Hill, it's like a lot of the stuff this like opportunity to do photography was, you know, if there was a need for it, I brought it up. I offered, you know, I said, haven't done a lot of professional photography, but I can, you know, step in if you need me to for now. And, you know, mm-hmm. we'll see where it goes. And, you know,
it's growing.
You have to ask for stuff or say, let me try this or,
right.
you know, maybe come up with a proposal, you know, on your own time and bring it.
Right.
To the right people's attention or something. But it's a really hard thing. It's scary,
yeah.
you know?
I feel like it's definitely scary, especially just being in uncharted territory in any way is tricky. And if you're asking yeah. somebody to take a chance on you, that like
yeah.
in uncharted territory is a whole other bag. But I do think
right.
that more and more, especially with kind of like the convergence of the challenges that the industry faces versus like the struggle of the worker, you know, that mm-hmm. like wage stagnation or just like mm-hmm. inability, you know, that it would take almost a decade of working this industry to get health insurance. I feel like the thing that's exciting to me and that I'm excited to see more of are people looking around and saying, okay, how can I solve the problems through creating yes. something? And I think we've seen it, you know, we haven't really seen it like in the bigger, those like huge problems that need to be solved. But I'm curious,
sure.
I really want to see it in distribution. I feel like people mm-hmm. have innovated on retail a decent amount and
yeah.
Definitely on the producer side with product. But there's these other links in the chain that I think it'll
yeah,
be, I'm excited to see.
Yeah, there are like some gaps that need to be closed. I think that, through the whole chain, like cheese makers, the distance between like a cheese maker and a consumer mm-hmm. is like pretty grand. And even within the industry, like at ACS, a lot of times the cheese makers don't get to go to that
right.
they're making the cheese, you know, so the people who go are like, you know, it's, you know, it's like a different team usually representing that's like, you know,
right. A sales team will go.
It's a huge role to play to like represent this whole creamery and be like, here we are, like, you know, here we are, you know, to talk about this cheese that we're all really proud of. And we have, you know, this sort of like attitude at Jasper Hill that everyone is on the sales team and, you know, but there's still this like gap in communication. And I think that there's interest there that, you know, consumers want to hear things directly from producers and also distributors.
Yeah.
I mean, we work with great distributors, but there's still like a gap. And once the shoe leaves us, you know, and is in
yeah.
someone else's hands, we don't always have control. And there's like all these different points at which
right.
a cheese can change in quality for so many reasons over the course of its life before it reaches the customer. And I think, yeah, it's like in everyone's best interest to like improve those communications, like get everyone talking more and,
right.
you know,
make
I don't
those
know.
Like it's like make the supply chain more efficient, but also like just work better for everyone. I think that's the real
yeah.
charge.
Yeah, and also understanding. I think people have a little bit of an idea. They understand that cheese making is hard work. Like it's physically hard. It's financially hard. Like these people are trying super hard to do something really special that they like don't have to do. Or maybe
right.
you know, it's like. It's very special, and people understand that, and people are, you know, starting to appreciate, you know, cheesemongers and things like that.
Right.
And I think that part of it is, yeah, we need to understand really, like, the better understanding we have of each other's jobs and what we do, the work that goes into it, the decisions that have to be made, like, how they're made, if we're all really transparent about that, I think that we can solve a lot of problems that way.
Yeah, definitely.
You know?
And it's easier to see the value that everybody brings to the table when there's more, I guess it's all about empathy at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think as a cheesemonger, I don't know, I felt really lucky living in New York. I felt like I got to tour warehouses a lot, which is really important. Like people want to tour creameries and farms and caves and for like obvious reasons, they're like remarkable. It's like amazing to see that stuff in action. But
right.
I would really encourage cheesemongers to visit their distributors' warehouses and stuff too, and like see what it's like, what they're dealing with, and like how it works, how they pick things for you, talk to them about, you know, your needs, and I think that it makes, I don't know, like that relationship is, I think, sometimes not paid as much attention to as the relationship one, you know?
Yeah, totally. Very interesting stuff. Well, we're getting to the end of the episode, but I have one more question that I'm excited to hear your answer on. It's sort of like a more sweeping question, but if you had to point to one thing, like, is there one way that you feel like your perspective has changed about the cheese industry or about what any segment of it through having these very different and unique positions that you've had?
I think it's really two things that I think are connected is that it's all about the people. Like, the people are what make it. It's like this network of very, like, passionate, driven, intelligent people who are, like, cheese is this weird ancient thing that we've all decided for some reason to, like, be obsessed with and take really good care of and, like, share, like, spend our whole lives. I don't know. It's crazy. you have all these people from that are, like, are really different, creative, you know, scientists or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's that, like, eclectic mix of people, I think, that makes for, like, a good organization on, like, many levels. Like, when you are in a large group of cheese people or just looking at one company, like, having varied skills and stuff, like backgrounds really helped. And I think part of that too is, I'm trying to figure out the right way to say it. To try to connect those dots as much as possible, I think, is really helpful. Like, and to not be, like, elitist about anything or to, like, to the big picture, like, always. Like, to be able to take a step back and see how, maybe, whatever, there's maybe a cheese company that you think of as, like, sort of big and industrial and, like, who needs them? But when you start to see the roles that all of these cheesemakers have been playing in the industry over, like, the course of, like, many decades or, you know, the more you understand the role that every type of business, you know, sort of plays, I think it's really important.
Maybe also how interconnected everything is, right? Like, I know at least for myself, it's like working at the larder with you. I think I thought of that esoteric cheese selection in kind of a vacuum. And since then it's been like, oh, everything is everything, you know, like there really aren't these like cut and dry segments of the industry as much as it might seem at first glance.
Yeah. And everyone had to learn from somewhere else or like, you know, there's all these origin stories that are like very different and very important. And, understanding, it's the thing that, you know, Mateo says all the time about a rising tide floats all boats. And I think it's like super true. The longer you work in the more you see that everyone is like playing a pretty important role here and like
totally
doing their best, you know, for, you know, their, you know, constituency or whatever.
It's, that's awesome. Oh man. Well, Lilith, thank you so much for joining me on air today.
Yeah, this is fun.
I'm totally inspired by your journey. And I know we'll all be watching to see how you continue to influence the industry in the years ahead.
Yeah, we'll see.
Awesome. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. For those cheese professionals out there, we would love to hear more about your experience in the cheese industry. What challenges have you tackled and what barriers are as yet unsurmounted in your professional journey? Please keep the conversation going with us on Twitter or Instagram at Cutting the Curd, or shoot us an email at cuttingthecurd@heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back next week with more Cutting the Curd.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the food world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awali, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.